So we are here with Chip Cleary. What is your role within Rulantica?
My role is the senior consultant to the project, and I started 6.5 years ago. That's when this project really had it. The Mox had been dreaming about doing this since the 1990s, but the project's first real stick in the ground was 6.5 years ago. And I guess I was the lead person with Michael Kreft and the Mock family and Michael Mock and Thomas and Ann and Roland and Jürgen to try to take all the dreams and take all the ideas and push them into a form that you could look at on a piece of paper and then in 3D modeling and then in real modeling and then get to a point where it could be sent to the architects and sent to the different teams that worked around the world. And so my role at that time was to get the master plan done for this. So there, you know, I think we're very upfront about it. This is not the biggest water park in the world at this point, but there's many chapters of this story coming. And when we were probing the project, we wondered, should we try to build a big one first? And we quickly came to the conclusion that was a fool's errand. It would be better to build this in phases, in different stories about Rulantica, and each time learn what the guests like and what we could do better and things like that. So the whole site is master planned out. So there'll be many things over many, many years happening at this site. So it's kind of very exciting that you're going to shortly see, and you saw that video today. That video is about 3 weeks ago. And there is water in the wave pool. They're filling the lazy river today. There is water in a number of other pools, so it really is an exciting time for us.
How did you get involved into the project?
In this project, I have had a very Mary Poppins career. It's like the weather vane blows, and here I go. And so I was the chairman of the board of IAPA, and Roland Mock came along as chairman of the board and I had known Roland for many, many years. And I had sold my company in the United States. And so there was a time where I was doing some work with IAPA as the CEO, but I had no idea what I wanted to do next. And Roland, we were in Los Angeles for an IAPA event, and Roland came up and said, oh, I want to build this water park, but I don't want to do something normal. It's got to be Mock, it's got to be amazing, it's got to be with Michael Mock and the family. And so I said, oh, great, that sounds like fun. And a couple of weeks later, I got a phone call, and they said, come over for 6 months. And I said, great, wonderful. My wife and I, you know, my sister lived in Basel for many years, and I was in Ireland as a kid, and so, you know, have a European connection, and thought, well, great adventure. And that was 6.5 years ago, and we quickly realized how complicated this project was going to become. You know, Germany is a very regulated country, and that's fine and great, but there's a process, and we don't fit into that process. When you build a Burger King, everybody knows what you're going to build, or a McDonald's, or a hotel. When you go to build something like this, with 300-foot spans on the roof and things, the municipalities need a lot of backup and a lot of hand-holding and a lot of thought process to get through it. So with the partners, that took a lot of time. But that's how it originally started, was 6.5 years ago, with Roland just saying, what are you doing?
Come over for six months.
Now, what's the biggest difference between a European and an American water park?
Yeah, you know, in 1990, I built my first water park. It was an outdoor water park. It's called Splish Splash. Got to be very, very big. It's in the New York area, Long Island. And at that time, the rides were simpler. The concepts were simpler. But back then, I had seen Disney's Typhoon Lagoon. And that had just opened. So I was very influenced at that time that storytelling and theming were going to be an important part of the water park industry. And there's a lot of great water parks that just have no theme, no story, no fun, but just slides and things. I thought that's great, and if it works for you, that's great. But I always believed that the business had to come around that to more of a whole story and a whole theme and a whole idea. So the difference between here in the United States and over here in Europe starts in a lot of places. It starts first with the locker rooms. you know, in the locker rooms, we're still stuck in America with very traditional, here's the ladies' locker room, here's the men's locker room. And if we have time, I can tell you a funny little story. When we visited 26 parks around the world while we were researching this project, and I was in a park in Germany, and I was in the locker room with Michael Kreft von Buren, and we're talking, and all of a sudden, I'm taking my shirt off, and I look to the right, and there's this very nice lady standing next to me taking her shirt off. And I was like, are we in the wrong locker room? I thought we were in the ladies' locker room. Turns out it was co-ed locker rooms, and I, as an American, I had never seen that one. So it's great, wonderful, I like girls, but here we are. So now our locker rooms here are very, very, first, it is a co-ed locker room, but you have changing cabins. So you go into these changing cabins, so a husband, or excuse me, a guy and a girl can, you know, each go into one, lock the doors, and then come out the other side, and they're in the locker area. So the co-ed thing, that's the difference between America and the United States. The next thing is that the typical locker room in America looks like a hospital. You know, it's a hospital for changing your clothes, you know. It's all white tile, it's all white, everything. And this really looks like an old, old locker room in an old workhouse. Next difference is normally they build very big locker rooms, and we built 8 boutique locker rooms so that you didn't wind up in this mile-long thing that had no end to it and that you really felt overwhelmed by the whole thing. So that's a difference. Then as you come into the park, we're doing something that I've never done anywhere, and maybe somebody's done it, but we don't know about it. We're heating the floor.
Ah, okay.
And why are we doing heating the floor? Well, that started out with my wife. My wife is always cold from the feet to her hips in an indoor water park. And then I made it kind of a thing to go around and talk to girls that worked as lifeguards and stuff in indoor water parks. And they always say, oh, I'm freezing. They tell me it's, you know, in Fahrenheit, it's 84 degrees in here, but or it's 30 degrees in centigrade. But they, oh, I'm freezing. It can't really be that cold because your feet are always that barometer to, you know, you get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night in the winter and you go, oh, wowee, the floor is cold.
Is the floor in the outside area also warm or not?
In the water park.
Oh, only in the indoor park.
In the indoor water park, we're heating the whole floor. And that's revolutionary. And when you see the room where all these pipes come back together, where they mix it and balance it, it actually looks like artwork. There's just all this beautiful pipe with all these valves. So that's a difference. Another thing is when you're storytelling to the height we are, and it starts from the lobby, it goes into the it starts in the hotel, really. And then as you come out of the hotel, you're, you know, into this world of where did the mermaids come from? Where did the sea serpents come from? Here's the hunt for this. And so when you're storytelling like that, you really, when you sit around and have all these discussions, you really have to think, Would a water slide in that area have flashing lights and buttons and whistles? Probably not, you know. And so it becomes these octopus of things that you have to consider and think about. And also in our particular case, we have a very long lazy river. For an indoor water park, it's very long. And it is a dark ride for about half of it. And so how do you do that? That was a big difference from America, because we really just more do, you know, you'll have a lazy river and it might have a dumping bucket or something on it, but it doesn't have TV monitors and sets and lighting and sound and all of this. So so the core product, since we live in a world now that's international, we look around here and you have ProSlide and Whitewater and everybody right here. The slides themselves are, you know, fairly becoming a product across the thing. In our particular case, we chose the big slides are from ProSlide Canada, and the smaller slides are from Aquarena in Germany, and that's been a very good blend. So lots of little details coming together into the first step or the first chapter of this story, and hopefully over the next 10, 15 years, there's going to be a lot more chapters happen as cool. We go along.
So, for example, when I enter Rurantica, and if I would see you, where would you, what would you say to me? Which part of Rurantica do I need to see first?
You know, obviously, if you had small children with you, if you saw in that video, there's that big haunted tree, but you're only seeing a little tiny bit of it. And having visited a lot of places in Europe, this is an over-the-top children's area, and it's really designed that there's only really one entrance in and out, so little kids can't run in and out. You know, so if you had small children, I would say, oh my gosh, go over there and see this, because it has little places hidden with beach chairs and little rock work areas that for children to calm them down and keep them more contained. But then if to me, the signatures, there's a lot of signature things here. Okay, we have great slides, big four passengers, five passengers. But the lily pads, to my knowledge, we haven't seen many lily pads in Europe, and I'll explain lily pads just to, it's a big net that hangs over a pool, and then there are shipwreck pieces of a shipwreck made of floating foam, and you have to walk approximately 10 meters across all these floating things without getting dumped in the water. My colleagues had never seen this, never heard of it, and I brought a video from YouTube one day of some mommy in America who was determined. Her 12-year-old daughter went running right across, and the mother spent like 10 minutes getting across here. But in the end, she got up and she did the muscle sign, I won, I did it. And so there's a lot of these little hidden things in Rolantica that you're probably not going to expect or not have seen so much, because I haven't seen it in Germany and areas here. So there's something for everybody. The lagoon pool is absolutely, the trees, I don't know if you could got a peek of them from the tornado wave going, yep. But the trees came from Tree Locate in England, and people think they're real live trees. They're beautiful. Another thing that's going to be very unique about Rolantica, it's lit like a Broadway show.
Mm-hmm.
It's not lit. The lighting design was not a swimming pool lighting design.
Okay.
We do have lights that are there for safety and for swimming.
Yeah, of course.
But there's a lot of lampposts that weren't in that video. They're coming next week. They're all artwork lampposts, about 70 of them. And so there's flickering lampposts. There's old-fashioned lighting. So it's not lit like a baseball field.
Yeah.
You know, it's it. And on the far wall, we have a giant LED video wall. Giant. So you're going to go by on the lazy river on one level. You'll be in the wave pool, able to see the wall. And then there's some other elements there. But the sea serpents and the mermaids may have some things to talk about with you on this video wall. So it'll dominate the whole room because it's in the oculus, the pointed area there.
And what was the most challenging part for you for the project?
I would say that I was, when you work in different places around the world, there's different laws, there's different things, and I am 100% a safety person. You know, it has to be safe. It has to, wherever I'm working, it has to fit in with whatever the government regulations are. But I did not realize when I got here that fiberglass is not an approved building material.
Okay.
So you just cannot go in Germany and take fiberglass and put up a water slide. You have to start back and prove. You have to hire a specialized company in Germany that is, there's only a couple of them, and they study the fiberglass and the molecular structure of the fiberglass and the strength characteristics of it and how much load and the flanges and the type of bolts that come together and all the dynamics of fiberglass, you know. And I think we've all probably, if you've been in Germany here or there, you'll see a stainless steel water slide, yeah, quite often. And I always wondered, wow, stainless steel water slide, that's different. Now I know why. You can build a stainless steel water slide right away. Fiberglass is what's not approved. And so, but all of the big pro slide rides and the big Canadian stuff is fiberglass, so we had to do it. So it took almost 2 years to get the permits for the water slides. So that was a big eye-opener to me. You know, America is crazy and has its things, positives and negatives, but we're very entrepreneurial, and usually in about 3 months you have your permits for the water slides and go. This was different. I respect it. There's great people. We've made a lot of friends now. We're actually in the process now of having testing done on the next phase of Rolantica. And so that will be ready when the fans are ready and everybody's ready. But that was a really different environment for me. I'm used to, you know, here we go.
Yeah.
And that was a little more.
And the building,
which PGAV from St. Louis did, is a very unique structure and a very unique building. It required a lot of engineering, and the roof was built in the Black Forest out of timber. And it's gorgeous architecturally. But that was a big project. I think you saw in the video lifting indeed. Those beams. And those beams are about 300 feet long, 100 meters long. And that's a big span and a big beam. And that was kind of interesting. But we're getting close now. The water's in the pools, most of them. We've tested a lot of rides already. We're in the detail mode now. The heavy construction is done. But there's about 1 million details, you know, just even down to the numbers on the lockers. We're having old-fashioned ones made that look like they were in a factory, and the porcelain got chipped and everything. So it's the mock attention to detail is so strong in this, and they're so supportive. You know, we're all scared to death.
Yeah.
When you do something a little different, a little out there, different things, you're always, how is this going to be received? But I think that the true Europa Park fan, when they come, will really appreciate what the Mox did in the first chapter of the story.
Of course.
I want to emphasize, this is just the first chapter.
You speak already about first chapter.
Yeah.
What can we expect from phase two?
Well, I think even more immersive story tales. Mm-hmm. I will give you a hint. That's Felger, who is in the lobby of the hotel, if you've seen the snake. And I think you may have seen him in the video, his brother in there. The cousin might not be happy and might want to be involved in the future.
Interesting.
So I will just leave it at that.
Okay.
It's more immersive storytelling, more things, wow type, whatever mm-hmm. language you speak, wow moments. Mm-hmm. Wow is a word in China, anywhere. And I think the second phase will really take the wows a little further. It'll also give us time to analyze what we got right. And what we could have done better. You know, when you start a project that's been really in design and in construction for 4 or 5 years now, it's always caught in a moment, right? Because you actually have to say, we're going to stop tonight drawing and we're going to start building. And so we think we got it pretty right. We think, you know, we're doing strange things, too, for Europe. We studied Universal Studios, who we love, and it was a great company, and it was so nice to us, at Volcano Bay, and they don't have ticket booths.
Okay.
Buy your tickets online. And that's meant to keep, because at Europa Park, you can have a busy day, mm-hmm. and you could have 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 or more guests.
Yep.
Well, what happens if one day at the water park we had 10,000 people show up? It's in a building, is a finite limit. And so we decided that all the advertising, all the marketing, all of this would be basically revolved around buy your tickets online for guaranteed admission. And so we do have ticket counters and we do have places in the lobby, but we're hoping over 90% of our guests will come pre-ticketed. And that way, we won't disappoint you, or we'll be able to say to you, Tuesday's not the right, you know, we're really sold out, why don't you try Wednesday? Because you don't, I had visited a few places where they had really, really long lines waiting for people to come out as people were going in. Mm-hmm. And in Europa Park, we can always put another person in. Here, you have the Brandschutz, the fire marshal, and he's right, and the building can only hold this many, and then we stop.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for
I hope I was helpful.
Yeah, thank you.
And as we say in English, surf's up.
Thank you.
November 28th.
Definitely.
Thanks a lot.